Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome, welcome to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. We want to give a shout out to any new listeners who are joining us for the very first time. We're happy to have you on board. For those of you who have been here from the start, you already know the drill. We live and die by this team just like the rest of you, and we make no apologies for that. I am your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Joining me tonight on the show from Reading, Pennsylvania is Micah Storms. Micah, how we doing?
It's about time. That's all I can say, because I feel like it's been 4 weeks or something like that. It feels longer since I've had good vibes, at least doing this show here. So I'm feeling much better than last week. And it was great to see the Fenway faithful really into that game. They were really into the whole series. I feel like that's been lacking over the last month or so at Fenway. Probably one of the reasons why the team's played so poorly at home. But a big win. And hopefully it kind of leads into the weekend and they can end the first half on a good note.
Yeah, finally, the streak of midweek losing series has come to an end. So like you said, hopefully they can build off of that. Also joining us tonight from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. How we doing, Terry?
Not too bad. A bit of a surprise win in Game 3. I figured Nathan Eovaldi would pitch a complete game shutout, because he would have willed himself to do it, but got slapped around, as I like to say. And while we're at it, Red Sox 2 games above 500 now, 11 back from the Tampa Bay Rays, who have lost 5 in a row, by the way. That must be their longest losing streak of the season. Red Sox are 3 games back from the final wild card spot. So you win 3 against Oakland, you're knocking on the door. Maybe we're buyers, and I've been so convinced that we would be sellers, but we'll get into that for everybody on the PM commute. So look out for that, and we'll give our predictions on the series.
Yeah, the roller coaster season kind of continues, and a lot of it will depend on how they do in Oakland this weekend. If they can actually, you know, pull off a series sweep, which they should be able to do, then you're right, they're right back in it, and the script changes a little bit. So we'll see how that goes. But for now, we got to get into this Rangers series. So we're going to get into our top 5 list for this one. So leading us off, Micah, who do we got coming in at number 5?
Coming in at number 5 is Masataka Yoshida. And he has been so consistent. And I feel like Red Sox fans don't even really realize how consistent he has been. On the series, he was 6-for-13. And he was able to raise his average up to 312. He's just so consistent. I don't think we appreciate what he's doing. And he is a rookie. I know he doesn't necessarily his age because of his time in Japan, but he still is learning big league pitching and just getting used to the game over here. But he is just seamlessly transitioned great. You take away those first 10 games, I couldn't even imagine what his average would be. Since June 15th, he's hitting .364. So again, just super consistent and someone who is producing at a high rate for this offense. I said before the show, I think he probably is a bigger all-star snub than Verdugo, and I don't think many Red Sox fans are talking about that. But I certainly believe that to be true. So another impressive series from Yoshida. And I think this is what we can kind of expect from him. Maybe not 6-for-13, but, you know, a consistent, you know, high average guy, high OBP guy. I really think that's who he's going to be during his time with the Red Sox.
Terry.
He's a guy that he's won my trust, Masataki Yoshida. He does still kind of low key go on some quiet spells. You know, in late June, he didn't really have a good series against the White Sox, didn't particularly have a good series against the Marlins, was hitless in a lot of those games. But then with the Toronto series, he ratchets it up, you know, and in the first game, he's 3-for-4. 2-for-3 in the next one, and then just, let's see, 2-for, at least 2 hits across all 3 games here with the Texas Rangers. Part of the reason why, he also might be flying under the radar is, even though he's, basically a hitting machine, he's only had 2 home runs since the start of June. So a little bit quiet there with the long ball, but that's fine. I mean, if you're cranking doubles and, you know, moving the base runners along, that's all we care about, really. So big series for him, and I'd love to see what he could do in the month of October. If we ever make it there again, I mean, we saw what he did, you know, under the bright lights of the WBC. He really strikes me as a player who's going to show up in big games. And, he's been big for the last week and a half.
Yeah, he's been playing great. And, preseason, +600 to win Rookie of the Year. I felt very good about that for a long time. Unfortunately, Baltimore just keeps calling up prospect after prospect, and Gunnar Henderson's going to ruin that bet for me. But I still think Yoshida is going to be right there in the Rookie of the Year race, maybe even the batting title race if he keeps this up at the end of the year. He's come exactly as advertised. You know, good, smooth swing, patient at the plate, a little more power than I think maybe we anticipated at first. But like you said, Terry, he does go on those streaks where doesn't hit a home run for a while, but that's okay. He wasn't, we didn't sign him here to hit 40 home runs. We signed him here to hit over 300, play good defense in left, and be a guy who moves the chains for the offense. And he's doing exactly that. And I have to give a little bit of credit to Alex Cora as well, because we've been pretty hard on him this year, I think rightfully so. But Cora manages him very well, because they obviously did their background on him, and they spoke to his former coaches, former teammates. And one thing that they kept bringing up was, his former coaches and teammates would say he does go on cold streaks. And when that happens, you have to kind of just sit him for 2 games. And it's hard to do. It's, a lot of managers won't want to do it. They want the players to kind of figure it out for themselves. But when Yoshida's gone cold, Cora does sit him at least for 1 game, sometimes back-to-backs. And, lo and behold, Yoshida gets back in the lineup and starts raking again. So they obviously know how to manage his streakiness when it does occur. But still, it's pretty rare when that happens. And for the most part, he's good for a hit or two a night. And he's just been a perfect addition to this lineup. So couldn't be happier with the way it's working out. The contract seems to be just, you know, absolutely perfect for what you're getting. I know Bloom took a lot of heat from pretty much everyone around baseball when he signed him, but it's working out so far. And if this team does go on some sort of run in the second half, Yoshida is going to be a very important part of that. So hopefully he stays healthy, doesn't get hit on the knee or the elbow anymore, because it feels like he's been getting just tattooed lately. But as long as he stays healthy, I think he's going to be in for a big year. So with that, moving to the other side, the diamond, Terry, who's coming in at number four?
That is going to be the Red Sox setup man, who, in my opinion, is the best reliever on the team. That's Chris Martin. Had a kind of a couple of, you know, key appearances. You know, game two, he came in to protect a two-run lead in the eighth inning. Got through that pretty cleanly. Did give up a hit, but nothing beyond that. Struck out one and then was kind of brought in an emergency situation. There's nothing comforting about Justin Garza being in the game under any circumstances. Okay, with a 4 or 5 run lead in the ninth, that's just asking for it. And sure enough, he allows a base runner. Martin has to come into the game, and then, you know, basically gets a double play, I think, on the very first pitch he throws, and out we go. So, I mean, he's got an ERA well under one. And let me ask you guys this. If you're a team that needs a reliever, and I think we can say, you know, Texas still does, despite the Chapman acquisition. But a lot of people are going to be shopping for relievers. And you call the Red Sox. Which one are you asking about?
I would still lean Chris Martin first. Jansen obviously has the name behind him, but he's got a very expensive contract. Martin doesn't. Martin's got a very reasonable deal. So the money's reasonable. They're both, I know Martin's a little bit older than Jansen, but I think seems a little more durable and trustworthy at this stage. So I think a lot of teams will call about him. Teams will call about guys like Winkowski too, and, you know, some of your other bullpen pieces that have developed here, but if they're looking for an established veteran piece, I think they would choose Martin over Jansen.
Yeah, I think hands down, it's got to be Martin at this point. I mean, the fact that they're both under contract till next through next season makes them very attractive because they're not rentals. But Martin's only due $9.5 million, whereas Jansen, I think, is 16 next year. So, I mean, there's a significant dollar difference when you're talking about relievers. And I don't know the exact stat, but I know there is a massive difference in Jansen's production when he throws on 2 days rest versus 1 day's rest. And when you're getting to the end of the year and in the postseason, you don't want to have to think, oh, when was the last time we used Jansen? Oh, we used him yesterday. I probably can't use him, or he might not be as effective. We have not seen that with Martin. So, I mean, I would definitely take Martin. He's been probably, I think he's got to be a top three reliever signing in the offseason. And I would put his numbers up with anyone that signed in the offseason. So he's been a great find for Bloom.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. And again, the contract is living up to it. He's completely worth the money that Chaim Bloom gave him over the winter. Perfect bridge to Jansen. And, you know, the Red Sox really missed him when he was hurt earlier in the season. They missed him a lot. Having that surefire eighth inning guy is just as important, I think, as having a surefire closer. So Martin's been dealing. This is part of the reason why, you know, it's going to be tough if the Red Sox do decide to be sellers. Because like you said, Terry, teams are going to call. Teams like the Rangers who need bullpen help are going to call. And it's going to be very hard to say no, you know, when if you're out of it and you're deciding to sell and someone wants Chris Martin, it's going to be hard to say no to dealing him. So we'll see what happens. But Certainly a great season for him so far.
Real quick. Yeah, no, he's given up just 5 earned runs all season, 1.67 ERA, but he's giving up no earned runs since the Guardians, which was an ugly series all around for the Red Sox, but he gave up 2 runs to them on June 6th and nothing since. So he's definitely going on a run. I would imagine he's the best 8th inning guy in baseball. I don't have those stats up, but certainly far and away better than I expected he would be. And I still thought he would be solid. So,
yeah, and I was looking it up earlier. I thought he was towards top of the league in holds, which I know is a little bit of an outdated stat not many people care about, but he's got 14 holds on the year. That sounded like a lot to me. He's middle of the pack in Major League Baseball, and maybe that's just because the Red Sox haven't been in that many close games. We haven't seen the 7th, 8th, 9th inning bridge, you know, that many times. So maybe if they start to play better, maybe if the starting pitching, you know, sorts itself out, maybe he sees more action like that. But he's, either way, you're right, he's on an incredible run right now. So it's good to see. So with that, coming in at number 3 in the top 5 is going to be Connor Wong, who had a phenomenal series at the plate, 6-for-9 in these 3 games. And look, it comes at a very interesting time because the Red Sox just DFA'd Caleb Hamilton, re-signed Jorge Alfaro to a major league contract for the rest of the year. Reese McGuire obviously on the shelf with the oblique injury, but Connor Wong is the guy right now, and he responded in kind with a good offensive series. We know he still has pop in that bat. He just barely missed a home run tonight. I swear it was like by a couple of inches he missed a home run. Almost got one onto that ledge on the Green Monster. So the power's there. The athleticism is there. Defensively, he's still great. You know, his metrics have dropped off a little bit, but he's still, you know, a top 10 defensive catcher in the league. You know, there's only a few guys really that have surpassed him. Austin Hedges and Shona Heim, who we saw in this Texas series, has also surpassed him defensively a little bit. But Wong is still great behind the plate. And he's certainly, you know, part of the re-signing of Jorge Alfaro is that, you know, Alfaro is a bit of a butcher behind the plate. He's known for his bat. He's never been known for being a good defensive catcher. So Wong will always have that advantage of, I think the pitching staff trusts him. I think that he's got the defense nailed down. If he can just hit around 250, you know, he doesn't have to be an all-star. You don't need him to turn into Adley Rutschman. If he just turns into a solid big leaguer who can go 1-for-4, maybe hit a home run every now and then or a double and hit around 250 and not be a black hole in your lineup, that paired with his defense, you've got something there. You really do. And, you know, 26 years old, he's still young, still developing. It's a good sign all around if he keeps this up. Because we were sort of thinking for a long time that he seemed like the forgotten guy in the Mookie trade. You know, everyone talked about Jeter Downs when he first got here. They hyped him up and, you know, he turned out to be kind of a bust at this point. Verdugo, we knew kind of what we were getting and he's been a little bit better than we were expecting, but we knew we were getting an everyday player there. Wong was a bit of a mystery. All we knew was that he was a catcher who had some pop, but he was a little bit raw and needed a lot of work. He's really turned into something. He's turned into a big leaguer for sure. So hopefully the bat keeps up and the defense keeps up, because that would be a great development for this team. If you get a 26-year-old catcher back there who can work with this ever-evolving pitching staff, that's a great sign. Micah, your thoughts on Connor Wong?
Yeah, what a impressive series. And honestly, he's really stepped up in a big way, just because they haven't had a backup for McGuire went down like 2 weeks ago, and they have not had anyone. And he's been pretty much the guy for almost every game. And he's played well, as you said, defensively. There is just no concern. And offensively, I still think there is another level to his game. I think catchers in particular, especially prospect catchers, think they probably were the most affected by the COVID shutdown season, because catchers typically take longer to develop offensively anyways. And then you just take an important year completely away from them. So I still think there could be more to Wong's game. Something I just looked up because I was just curious. What do you think JT Realmuto's numbers are? Because they're not that far off from Connor Wong. JT Realmuto is hitting 248 with 9 home runs. After tonight, Connor Wong is hitting 239 with 6 home runs, and he was so close to a home run, you know, for which would have been 7. So I'm not comparing Connor Wong to JT Realmuto. He is still the best catcher in the game. But the Phillies are paying JT a lot of money to put up just numbers that are just slightly over what Wong has produced thus far. And I think that's an encouraging stat that Wong is developing the way he is. I'm a fan. I think Alfaro really, it was a necessary add because Wong cannot keep this up. You just can't keep playing every night and expect, you know, for him to keep it up offensively. So Alfaro, I think, is going to be a good add. I thought it was funny on the broadcast. They were trying to talk up his defense, saying how hard he's worked with Veritek. It was funny. But I am happy that he is back, and it makes me wonder, will we ever see Reese McGuire again? I don't know, but definitely a good series for Wong.
I think we will see Reese McGuire again. And before I get to Wong, I mean, Alfaro's been passed around, and, you know, nobody will commit to him. And then the Red Sox get extremely desperate because, you know, McGuire goes down, and he's a pretty good backup catcher and seems to work well with the pitching staff. So not a bad guy to have. And then you had that Caleb Hamilton kid who was hitting 180 in AAA, hitting 180 against pitchers who aren't good enough to play Major League Baseball. So that wasn't great. And if you're going to have those type of numbers, you better be Sandy Leon. You better be one of the best game callers in Major League Baseball. Because, you know, that's how Rick Porcello won that Cy Young. Sandy Leon just impeccable when it comes to calling pitches. And we're not getting that with Alfaro. We're going the opposite. We're going completely... It just fits the theme, you know, with the Red Sox front office. Just if he's a bad defender, who cares? You know, just throw him out there. We've seen it at first base. We've seen it in the middle infield. Our outfield has been solid all year long, you know, defensively. So no complaints there. But as far as Wong goes, man, he just went off. And if somebody needed to go off, it was him. Go back to the Blue Jays series. Wong was 1-for-8 with 4 strikeouts. Go back a series before that. That was the Marlins series. He was 0-for-9 on the series. 3 strikeouts. Go back a series before that. So this is 3 series ago. This is the White Sox series. And Wong was 1-for-7 with 6 strikeouts. And one of those was a 4 strikeout game. That's a golden sombrero if you strike out 4 times. So he needed to go off. I just got a Nightingale tweet. Apparently the benches just cleared in the Mets game. No shock there. You know, things aren't going well in Queens, but anyway, so Wong is phenomenal. I will say this. He does have the benefit of not needing to worry about losing his job, because what are you going to do? With Casas, he should have lost his job at various points, but they didn't. And, you know, Kike kind of lost his job. But Wong's safe. I mean, there's just no depth. And I'm a big Connor Wong guy. All winter long, I express optimism that he could be not the best, you know, offensive catcher, but his power numbers could be among the best. And he hasn't quite lived up to that, but I don't think we've seen a ceiling. And if you go back, I mean, Christian Vasquez wasn't known for his offense out of the gates. He was an elite defensive catcher, and that's why he got called up. And gradually he became probably a top five or six catcher, and there were a couple of years where he was probably top three or four. And I can see Wong traveling a similar path.
Just something that I just looked up with Wong, his swing is kind of built for Fenway. He's very pull happy, so that monster is perfect for him. But his home and road splits are kind of eye popping because at Fenway, he's hitting 260 with a 480 slugging. But on the road, he's hitting 192 with a 319 slugging. So I think he definitely benefits from that big green wall in left field, which is fine. You play half your games there. That's fine. But, you know, he used the opposite field. He hit a little dribbler today off Eovaldi for his first hit to the right side, just a ground ball to the second base. But they were shifting him so far. I think when it comes to two strikes, Wong needs to do a little bit more of that because the K rate is probably the most concerning stat for Wong. He's up in the low 30s for K rate, which is high. So if we could see him put the ball in play a little bit more with two strikes, I think I would feel even more confident in Wong being the backstop of the future.
Yeah, I agree. That K rate has come down a little bit, but you know, if that's sort of your biggest complaint about a guy, it's not bad, right? It feels like everything else, he's definitely progressing forward. And Red Sox are kind of developing a nice little thing at catcher here because the Caleb Hamilton experiment, obviously, he's not a big leaguer. He's, I think, a little bit of a journeyman. And, you know, him being DFA'd and all that kind of opens up room for Ronaldo Hernandez down in Worcester to get more playing time, really solidify that catching position where his bat's starting to come around now. And he's starting to really hit. And he's a 25-year-old prospect for them. So it's all kind of coming together the way it should. So it's good to see. Coming in at number two, Micah, what do we got?
Coming in at number two is Justin Turner, and he had another big series. He was 6-for-12, and he's just on an absolute tear. I know last week we talked about how, you know, he's kind of either really hot or really cold, but he's been more hot than cold for quite some time. Since June 1st, he's hitting 314. And it's just the quality of the at-bats. I feel like he has a full count every time he's up to the plate. No matter if he starts at 0-2, he'll just work it to a 3-2 count. And that just goes to show you how just he's just a professional hitter. And the Red Sox offense is really benefiting from him. He just seems to always have a knack for getting that big RBI single. And he just had another terrific series. So I think him and Yoshida are really carrying this offense consistently. You know, we've had Devers have some big moments, but he hasn't been consistent for many of the series. And, you know, Verdugo's kind of hit a little bit of a slide here to end the first half. But it's really been Yoshida and Turner who have been pretty consistent for the last 2 months, which has been big for this offense, especially a struggling offense.
Terry.
The redheaded stepfather. He's been absolutely phenomenal. Alex Speer tweeted out yesterday, in Turner's last 35 plate appearances with runners in scoring position, he's 14-for-33, so that's an average of he's hitting basically .424 with runners in scoring position. He basically, I mean, he's basically fired Rafael Devers for being like Mr. Clutch, Mr. High Leverage, Mr. I'm gonna plate those base runners. He's been the most clutch guy this season. You know, when you look at the deadline and I think we're trending towards being buyers right now, but man, Justin Turner would be really coveted on a team that's looking to boost their corner infield. And I didn't expect this. I mean, it took a little while for him to get going. Like Micah said, basically from early June forward, he's giving you what JD Martinez was essentially giving you. Probably a few less home runs, but still, he's driving them in. He's finding the gaps. And he's going to be 39 this year. So how many dudes his age are thriving right now? Yuli Gurriel, I don't think is having a great season, but he has played. I think he won a batting title at age 37, if I'm not mistaken, 2 years ago. But I mean, he's Justin Turner has overperformed his contract so far.
Yeah, he just continues to be an RBI machine, and it's been a really welcome sight. I love the at bats where he just makes pitchers work. But he's not afraid to ambush pitchers too. He did that to Eovaldi in his first at bat tonight, jumped all over him for a base hit and kind of started that whole, even though they only got one run out of it, but he kind of got things going there right off the bat against one of the best pitchers in the league. So he's able to do that too. And let me ask you guys this. So Turner has a player option for next year. He has a player option that if he exercises it, he'll make $13.5 million. If the Red Sox continue to trend this way where they just, let's say they finish the year 81-81. They miss the playoffs. They don't do much the deadline. They kind of stand pat. Would you guys want Turner back? Would you want him to pick up his player option? Or would you prefer that he turn it down and the Red Sox potentially upgrade the DH position? Micah, I'll start with you.
I feel like if he wants to keep playing baseball, he would probably not take that deal because I think he would maybe try to get a 2-year deal. And that would not be something I would be interested in. I don't want to see the Sox pay for an aging DH essentially, because in another year or two, I don't know what his bat really looks like, especially in terms of the power. Maybe playing at Fenway would help him. But I would much rather see the Red Sox try to go out, maybe get a Hoskins or something like that. That is a little bit more of a power bat. I'd be fine if he picked up the offer for one more year. I absolutely think if Alex Cora and the coaching staff can manage his workload and they're not putting him in the field too much, if they can try to keep him healthy, I'm fine with another year, but I absolutely would not do another look for a 2-year deal to do another deal.
Terry, what about you?
I would be perfectly fine if he picked up his player option. Like Micah, I wouldn't explore anything beyond 2024, but I mean, who else is out there? Who's going to give you that type of production for $13 million? And he could decline the offer and try to get just a bigger 1-year deal. But, I mean, Nelson Cruz at age 41, he was only making $10 or $12 million himself, just crushing balls, hitting 40 home runs a year. So I can't imagine Turner would really command much more than that should he decline his option. Now, by the time he would decline that, we would probably have an answer on Bloom's status. We'd probably have an answer on Cora's status. I think he would love to play another season for Alex Cora. I think that would probably sway him to some degree into deciding to exercise that player option. So we'll see. I mean, if he gets traded, that's obviously a game changer, but man, what a interesting month July has turned out to be for all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why his, you know, his contract situation with the deadline coming up is going to be interesting, especially since he's occupying that DH spot. You look forward to the 23-24 free agent class. It's a couple of guys that can maybe replace his production. Teoscar Hernandez will be a free agent. CJ Cron will be a free agent. JD Martinez will be a free agent again. But you know, if Turner picks up that player option, I would have no problem with him coming back for one more year. I do agree with you guys, though. Just the one more year. I wouldn't want to negotiate another 2-year deal with him. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. So rounding out the top five tonight, coming in the number one spot, Terry, who do we got?
It has to be Brian Bello, who has basically ascended to being the ace of the Boston Red Sox. Watching his progression has really been a lot of fun to watch because I expected some growing pains this year. I expected an ERA probably in the low fours. Some gems in there, and then, you know, some games where he gives up a 5 or a 6 spot. But as I think it was Alex Spear that's pointed out, he makes the adjustments on the fly. It's not like Tanner Houck, who goes out there and has just lost the whole game, and you're just hoping he figures it out before the next game. I think it was in the first inning he tried throwing his sinker and wasn't locating it, wasn't getting swings and misses. And then the very next inning, he throws it again and starts commanding it. And, you know, you'd love to see some higher punch out numbers. He only struck out 3, but his command is just so good. And that changeup, especially on the inside, is just absolutely nasty. And the league just isn't catching up to him because, like I said, he's making those adjustments on the fly. Garrett Whitlock's another example who had a nice run of 5 or 6 straight starts where you're getting 5 or 6 innings out of him. He's in control the whole game. And then was it the White Sox series, I think, they started to figure him out. They started to get his sequencing down. They knew when to look for his changeup. And he ended up getting hurt before we could really see if he could make any adjustments. You know, the league caught up to him. And Bello just seems to be one step ahead of everybody. And that's what an ace is. That's what an ace is. You know, they win the mind games between, you know, them and the opposing batters in the box. And I mean, there's no telling what this guy's ceiling is. There really isn't.
Micah.
Yeah, I think I have a man crush officially on Brian Bello. I just cannot get enough of watching him pitch. And like you said, Terry, it's the in-game adjustments that are just so impressive. And it seems like, you know, if the first inning, he didn't have his good command. It was really the first 2 innings because he was, I think, 41 pitches. He should have been a little lower than that, but Hamilton screwed him on the double play. But his ability to say, you know what, okay, I'm going to attack more. And I think that's honestly why his strikeouts were down a little bit, is his pitch count was so high. I think he was just attacking the zone and saying, try to hit me. You know, I mean, I think that was his first home run given up in over a month. He's been so effective. That start reminded me a lot of John Lester start early in his career, because Lester would walk some guys, have a high pitch count, but he always seemed to be in the 6th or 7th inning. And that's what Bello's been able to do. Over his last 5 starts, he's averaging 6.8 innings, which is just mind-boggling, because I never expected that. I could have seen scenarios where he has some base runners, some walks, and he's really effective for 5 innings, but he is consistently pitching into the 7th inning. And I love that Alex Cora is just pushing him to get to that point, because that's what an ace is. You know, I don't know people who are watching baseball now and they're watching these, you know, top tier pitchers throw five innings. That's not an ace. That's not an ace. I mean, I'm still old school where I still believe that an ace is an innings eater, and there are just fewer and fewer innings eaters in today's game. And he certainly looks like he is becoming one. And I just pray he can stay healthy, because I truly think he could do some incredible things as the ace of the Red Sox. I'm ready to call him an ace. I think he's got the makeup. It just comes down to health for him. And that is just a flip of a coin with any pitcher. So I have nothing but good things to say, and I'm just so glad he is a Red Sox. And I hope they can work out an extension so that they end up getting, you know, some years cheaper than they would if they wait and then try to make a deal with him.
Health is going to be paramount, as we've seen with the other young pitchers on this staff. Garrett Whitlock hurt again. Tanner Houck, not his fault. You can't control taking a fastball to the face. But he is on the shelf again. You know, that's all it is with young pitchers. Health is the big key. But with Bayo, I love his pitch combination. I love his stuff. You know, he's got that really great changeup like you guys talked about, but his sinker, that power sinker down and into righties, and just, you know, lefties can't do much with it. It's just, it's electric. And the good thing with Bayo is that when bat does come to ball, he's usually getting a lot of ground balls. He's not giving up bombs. I mean, he's given up 8 home runs this year, but that's actually more than I would have expected. I would expect that number to be a lot lower. But still, 8 home runs and 14 starts, that's not a bad rate. Not these days. Most pitchers are giving up upwards of, you know, 25, 30 homers a year. I mean, Nick Pivetta, we talk about him all the time. He'll make 30 starts and he'll give up 35 home runs in those 30 starts, but that's the way it is. Bayo doesn't seem to get burnt like that. And that power sinker has a lot to do with it. So yeah, he's definitely taken that big step forward that we were all hoping that he would. I think he is your ace right now, especially with the injuries you've got. Paxton, you can definitely make an argument for him, but there's a feeling that Paxton may not be here after August 1st. So I'm hesitant to call him your ace, because I feel like he's just kind of here for a little bit. And, you know, Bayo is your true ace going forward, not just this season, but for many seasons down the road, assuming they do everything right by him. So it's been great to see. It's been great to see him take that big step forward. And it's such an important development for this Red Sox team for this year and years beyond, that Brian Bayo's the real deal. You finally do have a bona fide pitching prospect that you developed in your system, and he's here now, and he's winning big league games against tough teams for you. That's huge. So great step forward for him, great step forward for the organization, and he's become like must watch. You know, even if the Red Sox are struggling and they're, you know, they could get swept by Oakland, but you know, it's like once Bayo makes that start, I'm tuning right back in, because he's must watch TV at this point. I don't want to do the whole like he's mini Pedro thing, because that's way too much to put on a young kid's shoulders. I understand why people want to do it, but if anything, I'll just say he is your next big pitching prospect that has finally arrived, and we've been waiting a long time for that. So it's good that it's happening this year, and you know, hopefully we'll get to see a lot more of him going forward. So with that, we are going to wrap up this show. Keep an eye out for our series preview. That'll be previewing the Oakland Athletics series this weekend. And then after that, we'll have our Bastards Roundtable episode. That will be coming out this weekend as well. And after that, the following Monday, the Weekend Crew will have you guys. They will wrap up the what's hopefully a good Oakland Athletics series against those poor saps over there on the West Coast. So everyone, enjoy your weekend. Take care.